Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, you, listen up. Yeah, you guys know, we're back again. We've partnered with Louis Wicket of Key Mortgage Group. Louis Lens, guys, louislens.com. All right, you've heard the ad over the last couple months, and we are sticking with Louis. He has proved to be one of the best, truly. And you can see that in his Google reviews. He has 112 reviews, 5-star rating on Google. He is who you need to go to if you have mortgage needs. Wade Anderson on Google said, Louis did a great job working on our new mortgage. He went out of his way to make sure we got the best rate on our new home and worked extended hours some days to meet our work schedules. Would recommend anyone looking to purchase a new home to speak with Louis to make their dream of home buying a reality. Isn't that what you want? When you're trying to be in that process of buying a home, something that most people don't know a lot about, you want somebody that's going to give you the peace of mind and make you feel like as you walk away from that situation that you got the best deal and you were able to go through the entire process simply and educated throughout the entire thing. All right, Louis' cell phone number is 515-238-9949. Did you guys know that HousingWire, according to HousingWire, 90% of Americans could benefit from a mortgage refinance today? Call Louis at 515-238-9949. If you have a mortgage and haven't looked at it yet, call Louis, 515-238-9949. Hawk fans, we are here for our first recap episode of the season. Obviously not the outcome we wanted in the Purdue game this Saturday. 24-20, the Hawks lose the opener, and we're going to discuss how Kevin Drake and I had a feeling that the penalties might look like this. We were hoping not. We're going to talk about the defense, David Bell, and Petrus' first outing. Let's have a day. Let's go. Welcome in to the Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast. Last time we left you, I told you that we would be talking again when the Hawks were 1-0. Guess what? I probably jinxed them. It was probably me. It had to be me, right?
I don't think it was you, dude. I wouldn't take this blame if I was you.
Couldn't have been any of the other factors that have gone into this year, but...
Fact that they let the same kid, the only kid they had to worry about on the entire offense, score 3 times in the same game.
David Bell is good at receiver. Tweeted it at halftime. It's incredible that he is the second best offensive weapon they have. He is dangerous. We are going to get to the David Bell situation, because that is kind of the topic of conversation of, you know, potentially why the Hawks lost. A couple things. I want to go around the league quick and just quickly talk about the Big Ten. Illinois and Wisconsin led us off on Friday night. This was one of Kevin's bets, 51.5, and Kevin took the over. Kevin, never a doubt, right?
Never a doubt. Why would you ever doubt it? Never a doubt.
45-7. Game finishes with 52 points. You are lucky that the Illini could get a tutty in there in the second quarter, because
no, Kevin's just lucky the guy didn't miss the extra point.
Imagine one of the extra points was missed in that game. Kevin would have been fuming.
No, it was a field goal at the end of the game. That's what sealed the deal. I saw some dude in the replies had the over at 52.5. To that guy, I'm sorry.
Damn. Yeah, but part of the betting game is catching it right, which actually plays into my NFL pick for today. When I gave the pick for the Bills, by the way, repping the Bills. If you're one of our guys, I'll rep you. And that's what today's about.
And shout out the Bills. Ike Butker getting the first career start.
Let's go.
Earthman, congratulations. Love you, bro. It's about goddamn time.
Yeah, that's huge. Ikey, we were talking in the past couple weeks, actually, I think before the season, and Ike was, you know, everybody wants a chance. You need an opportunity, and Ike's getting that opportunity. He came in last week. Now he's getting the start, as Drake has just informed me. I'm wearing the Bills hat. I'm wearing the Manders t-shirt. If you're one of our guys, I'll rep you, and you make merch, I'll rep you. But the Bills were -13.5 early in the week, and if you want, you can get them today at -10. The line has been bet down. The money kind of on the
Yeah, team. they're losing right now.
Are they?
Yeah. When I came up to do this podcast, they were down.
Okay. Well,
to the NYJETS, don't bet the Jets.
Don't bet Jets. There's a lot of game, and I'm sure the New York, I mean, eventually they're going to beat the spread, right? But give New York Jets time. So Kevin actually, you know, Big Ten returns, and Kevin goes 2-0 on College Saturday. Alabama takes care of Tennessee, -21. Not a problem, right, Kev? How do you feel about yesterday?
I mean, yeah, they took care of business, is what it is. I don't think Tennessee's that good. It's more of a bet against Tennessee.
Yeah.
You know, I know I kind of contradicts myself from the previous week when I did bet on Tennessee, but whatever. We're not messing around with the SEC stuff too much more. It's gonna be Big Ten from here on out.
It was a spite bet. Speaking of Big Ten, real quickly, let's just go through the other scores before we get to the Iowa-Purdue game, which was left something to be desired. They opened up with Ohio State and Nebraska. Nebraska looked like potentially they were going to be an issue this season for the first half. I believe it was 24-17 at halftime or 24-14, 17-14, something around there. Ended up being 52-17. Ohio State was able to figure out Nebraska.
Did you see that Justin Fields had one incomplete pass?
Justin Fields, 20 of 21, 275 yards and two tutties.
Three touchdowns accounted for.
His running touchdown was, and his passing touchdown, the second one of the game, was a bullet. I mean, the dude's good. The dude is good.
Yes.
Nebraska. Well, there's more to talk about with Nebraska. I think they're an actual interesting team. The one thing I noticed from them is they actually looked like they cared a little bit more than they have in the past couple of years. So,
Scott Frost is still their coach, right? I didn't miss anything.
Yeah, he is.
I really do think Scott Frost is a good coach.
I do too.
And so I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. So if you give Scott Frost enough time with any group of kids, I do think he's going to do a good job, which is unfortunate to say about Nebraska because I still hate them and they're still a bunch of bitches. But Scott Frost may have it headed in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, this is an example of just giving it time, right? So many fan bases and people are quick to be like, all right, he can't get it done 2-3 years. I mean, Scott Frost, pretty openly down in Lincoln has just been trying to run Mike Riley's guys out of town so that he can have his own players in there and then let them run and play. I think that Nebraska will be a tough game for everybody this year, except for Justin Fields and the number five Ohio State Buckeyes, clearly. Rutgers kind of put a beat down on Michigan State. Don't know if you guys saw any of that game, but Rutgers scored as many big 10.
I told you guys earlier in the year, it's going to be a fade Michigan State type of year.
Dude, they didn't want anything to do. I saw so many tweets like, oh, so this is why Michigan State was fully on board with canceling the season. I think those tweets have merit. Rutgers scored as many Big Ten touchdowns in this game as they did all of last season. So, wow.
That's just an insane stat.
Wow.
That is one of the best stats you've ever pulled on this podcast, Clove.
Rutgers did it for me. they had 28 points at half on Michigan State. Michigan State's in the toilet. The Spartans might be the worst team in the Big Ten. They might be the worst.
They're
team
the new best. Dude, they just lost to Rutgers, dude. What do you mean they might be the worst team?
They just proved it.
They
didn't just lose. They got handled. And then the afternoon games came, which included Iowa, Purdue, Penn State, Indiana, which was one of my picks. Penn State, Indiana.
You almost had the sickest backdoor cover ever.
I know, and right?
And you just found a way to just shit it away. That was an interesting game, though.
Very, very questionable last play of the game. You know, who knows if
I think he was short, but there's no way you could overturn it.
Right.
The ball hit the front of the pylon.
And here's what I thought about it.
Ridiculous effort out of the Indiana guy, though.
That's what I'm saying. Not only that quarterback, but this is what I saw. I don't know if you guys saw the coach talking to him after the game, but it brought me back to when Coach Ferentz talked to us after beating Michigan or after we beat Ohio State. It's hard to not be happy for a group of guys that get a win over a Big Ten opponent. I don't care if you go back and you're able to actually figure out if that ball hit the ground or the pylon first. Give Indiana the win. I mean, fuck. Who cares? They deserve that shit. And Penn State?
No, they played tough. They're a good team. I mean, Penn State should have won that game.
For sure.
I don't know if you saw like how many yards they outgained them by, but they had some pretty rough turnovers, and the guy missed a few field goals. I think they had three missed field goals on the day.
Jake Pinniger out of Ankeny, Iowa, teammate of my brother's when in high school. He had a rough day, and that wins the game right there. That's
when he's playing for when he's playing for the Penn State bitch ass Lions, he can miss them all. Screw them.
That's a t-shirt. The Penn State bitch ass Lions. I'd wear that. Northwestern murdered Maryland. Literally nothing more needs to be said. Maryland dog shit like always. And Northwestern, you know, it's hard to tell what they actually have, but you know, they passed the test.
I think they'll be a solid team. Getting Peyton Ramsey from Indiana this year, I think they'll be a solid squad. I think they'll help their offense a lot. They always have a solid D.
Yep. And then Michigan, Minnesota was the nightcap, and Michigan handled Minnesota a little bit. Pretty easy. Michigan looked like a good football team. Minnesota, they have some firepower as well. Rashad Bateman, their running back, Ibrahim. Their quarterback's obviously, you know, pretty good. But top 25 matchup, and Michigan takes care of business. Minnesota's not going to be an easy game when the Hawks find them later in the year. And Michigan looks to not be shitty. So what I'm getting across the board here in the Big Ten is it looks really, really even. Like it looks like a spread out league where like any game could go any direction. Purdue and that brings us to the Purdue Iowa game, obviously, which is what our podcast is about, which is unfortunate because we're on the bad end of this one. What initial thoughts? I mean, Ike said it in our text message yesterday. I don't know if this is just because of our personal history.
Affiliation?
If it's because we're getting further away from the program and it doesn't feel like our team so much anymore. I wasn't so upset with this loss. I can't pinpoint why. Obviously it hurt when Iowa first of all, that last play of the game, absolute penalty on Nico. Refs are going to swallow their whistle 9 out of 10 times there because they don't want to change the game. But that's a penalty.
Well, that, and I mean, he threw in a triple coverage. If that guy's not even covering him, that's an incomplete pass still.
Right. Yeah, right. But regardless, when that happened and they took over and they're going to kneel the game out, you know, my heart hurts a little bit. That stings just like anybody else. But I got over it and went and ate Mexican food right after. And like, I just didn't feel this sense of like, I do really well at not carrying over my fandom and what happens in a football game to my real life. Right. And I think everyone should do that. If what the Hawkeyes do on Saturday affects how your week goes, then we should maybe, unless you're Kirk Ferentz or somebody in the program, you should probably reevaluate how much, you know, like what your life really means, because you can't live your life with it being determined on like 18 to 22 year old kids who play a game. But of course,
tell that to all the coaches.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. The coaches have a legitimate.
That's their livelihood, right? Right. They're an 18 to 22 year old.
And today they're legitimately pissed that a lot of their players played softer than baby shit.
Yeah. Yeah, let's start with the defense. And I got a lot of DMs and tweets, not a lot, actually, less than I thought I would, about the David Bell situation. We're going to go to Kevin here because, honestly, he's probably best equipped to answer this question. The overarching continuous theme from all these people asking was, hey, can you talk about why we continue to let David Bell tear our ass up? And why we're playing zone and just letting him sit down in holes, and why we aren't covering him man to man. And I don't have answers for this. And I don't know if you have answers, Kev, or
I do have an answer for you there. You don't want to cover the best receiver man to man. That's just dumb.
That's what I told the guy. I was like, yeah, that's what I told the guy. He's like, why don't we go man? Why do we never play man when we're just letting David Bell, their best player, sit down in wide open slots in the zone? I was like, well, if we go man to man and this guy's tearing us up in zone,
and
think about what happens when we
Let me just go ahead and put this out there. There shouldn't be those nice big old holes in his own defense. That's usually because somebody missed up a route match somewhere. Somebody blew a coverage. So
let me ask you this, Kevin.
Those are not designed to be there. It's like, oh, you just throw the ball here and he's going to be open.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, go for it. What?
Barrington Wade filled in. Nick Neiman slid inside to play middle linebacker for Jack Campbell, and Barrington came in for the outside position. And from my perspective, and I didn't pay too close of attention to be Wade, I thought he played an okay game, even made a couple of really nice tackles. Obviously, at the end there, that last touchdown, he didn't get a whole lot on the receiver and let Bell just kind of slip in behind him. I don't know who has Bell there. How did Wade play, and how much do you think did we miss Jack Campbell? With the shift of Neiman inside, what kind of effect happened there?
Yeah, so I mean, I thought Barrington played solid. Could have done a few things a little better, made some nice plays, like you said, had a pick. I mean, literally fell on his lap, but still a pick. That last play, that last touchdown, that was there. I think there was like a quick motion there or something, and Belton behind him was trying to change the call or something. I'm not sure what they were supposed to be playing, but him and Dane were not on the same page. So that's why he's just sitting there wide open in the back of the end zone. I'm not sure who's at fault, but one of those guys was responsible for him. Barrington was playing one coverage. Dane was playing a different coverage. Right. And, you know, you saw that a few times throughout the game. You saw the one guy who was just all alone in the middle of the field, like 30 yards down, that thankfully got overthrown.
That was
Bell again.
We got lucky there.
There's a few blown coverages. I mean, you know, you got a young safety back there, first game of the year in a weird off season with, you know, you didn't get the spring ball. So you can't say that these are unexpected, but at the same time, these are errors that will lose you games.
Yeah, no, it's for real now. Like, hey, we're playing games, and regardless of the preparation, you know, Purdue had the same preparation too. And I think the weird off season is obviously something to talk about for why some of these mistakes happen, but apples to apples, Purdue had the same weird off season, maybe minus some racial disparity issues, but we're on the game field now. You know, we have to make those adjustments. You got to know what defense you're in, what coverage you're in. I think one of the most frustrating things is that you see fans tweet about Coach Parker calling defenses where we just don't guard the guy. And I just, it's crazy.
I assure you, that's not in any of their defenses.
It's crazy to me. These people think, and they may be just drunk people who aren't even thinking, they're just letting the Twitter fingers run rampant. But if you think that we're ever calling something where we just leave people open, you should just put the social media away. We have assignments in every defense. Like Kevin said, we got a little bit confused between two guys there, but someone was supposed to be covering David Bell on that last play.
Yes, I assure you that Coach Parker's like, and we're just not going to cover this guy, but we're just going to hope they don't throw the ball here, and we should be okay.
Maybe they won't. Maybe we'll play 11-on-10, and we'll just totally outmatch him, and then we'll just leave this guy, and maybe they won't see him. Like that's the coverage we're going to run on this last play deep in the red zone, fourth quarter. It's not Coach Parker here, at least in the call. Could you say that he needs to have his guys more ready? Sure. Again, young safety that we're trying to make calls first game of the year. Defensively as a whole, I think Nixon played good. He got some penetration and did some damage at times. The defensive line as a whole left a little bit to be desired for me. Chauncey, I would have liked to see a little better.
We had a hard time getting pressure on the quarterback with just four guys. So that's something that makes it a lot harder to play defense in the back end.
And Kevin, would you say that oftentimes, and again, this is Purdue, who has for some reason has Iowa's number, almost specifically in the fact that they've been able to just be a step or two ahead with their passing game the last 5 years, 4 or 5 years. But when you don't have that pressure up front, that's something that really digs into the secondary and the second level. And that step ahead that Purdue has, it's a lot easier to have that when the quarterback's sitting there and has time, right? Like that's clearly.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it makes playing offense a lot easier and playing 7-on-7. You don't have to worry about pressure. It always starts up front, run game, pass game. If you have a dominant defensive line, it makes playing defense behind them like so much easier.
Yep.
I'm not saying the defensive line played horribly. They did some things pretty well. Towards the end of the game, like halfway through the third quarter, through the fourth quarter, though, we were not doing a great job of stopping the run. It seemed our legs are starting to get worn down a little bit.
Tired.
What's the guy's name? Horvath. Running back from Purdue.
Xander Horvath.
Yeah, dude's just a moose, and he was just carrying people at the end there. So
that guy is a legit
that was disheartening to see.
That sucks because Purdue's rushing attack, while they've been great passing the last couple of years, they talked about it. They were the worst Big Ten rushing team the last season. They averaged 2.7 or 2.9 yards per carry last year.
And now they got Mark Wiseman Jr. back there carrying folks.
I don't think they had a rushing game over 100 yards or a single player over 100 yards rushing last year at all. And game one, they come out and this Xander Horvath, he looks like Thor. Dude is just, he's a tank. A couple guys called him Mark Wiseman on Twitter. He literally looks like Wiseman, only maybe an inch or two taller. He was carrying dudes, and our defense did start to get tired. I think
let's not get it twisted. One second. Mark would still remove this kid's limbs and beat the shit out of him with him. But
I agree.
Just had to get that out there.
Yeah, I agree. Overall as a defense, I don't know. I don't feel bad about it. I think Purdue is a good offense. I really do. But we didn't get, we held them to 24 points. That's not horrible. We need to do better.
It's not great. It's not horrible.
We need to do better.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that Horvath kid had like 120 yards rushing.
Yep.
Now we're, I think they average around 4 yards of rush, which again isn't horrible, but our goal is usually around like 3.3.
Yep.
So I think we were pretty solid on third down until the last quarter. I mean, if you guys want to talk about this game, let's talk about the penalties. The penalties freaking killed us.
Yeah. I mean, let's move.
Even on that last drive, we had a face mask. We had a sack. Would have been like second and 16 from their own 40. Instead, they get a first down. They're on their own on the 40 going in now. I mean, that's just a huge, huge play in the game. You know, I think, what do we have? 10 penalties for 100 yards.
10 for 100.
That's the game right there. Yeah.
Coach Ferentz used to talk about three things. Now, obviously, the most important stat is points at the end of the game, because it doesn't matter what happens during the game. But if you want to look for indicators, here's three big things. Did you win the turnover battle? What are the penalties? Yeah. And that one wasn't bad. But we're going to get there when we talk about the offense in a second. How were the penalty ratios between the two teams? Really just how bad were your own penalties? And how did you win the special teams across the four phases? Penalty wise, we have, I think they mentioned it in the game, we have not seen over 100 yards of penalties for 2 years. And I would bet that if you go back through the stats, Iowa, the Hawks have not been, had 10 penalties or 100, let alone both, more than five times in the last 5 years or in the last decade. We're just not that team. Now, I sent you guys a message on October 9th, and I sent the screenshot of it this morning to the group chat. I said, let's see here. If I could find a prop bet on penalties to be more than last year for the Hawks, I'd literally put my savings on it. This was October 9th, so about 16 days ago. Drake responded, facts. And K Ward responded, putting my mortgage on it. So all three of us 2 weeks ago called that this would happen. I'm not going to put it on. I'm not going to put one game worth of data on off-season discipline. And we're not going to have that conversation yet. But if it becomes a pattern, it's going to be something that has to be talked about and speculated on as, regardless.
And we're going to go right back to the most hated people in the world.
Yeah. And that's okay. Because if you, regardless of what Doyle did socially, yada, Doyle was an absolute stickler on discipline. What kind of things show up in a game when you aren't a disciplined team? Penalties, turnovers, lack of communication. You know, some of these things, again, one game of data, there's a whole shitload of other factors, like a weird off season and short prep and no spring ball that play into this. But if this becomes a pattern and Iowa ends the season as the most penalized team in the Big Ten, all these other teams had the same prep, and it's something that may need to be talked about. If you have 100 yards of penalties. I mean, 100 yards of penalties. Come on. I mean, that hurts to even say. And
we outgained them 460 to 386.
Yeah.
In total yards. And we gave them 100 free yards of penalties. They gave us 21. So 20, that's literally the difference in the game, right?
That's the difference. Think
about it this way. We were net minus 79 yards. And a touchback possession starts at the 30, doesn't it? Or the 25?
25.
So that's a 75 or 79. That's a full possession. That's a full.
We gave them an entire possession on penalties. And here's the other thing. Let's move over to the offense real quickly before we wrap this up. We saw,
by
fumbles.
The way, how pathetic is it that my CTE is bad enough? I don't even remember where the touchbacks go.
It's a thing. And not only that, you were on kick return and then on offense.
That's so. Why my CTE is so bad that I can't remember the shit.
Cause you were on kick return, which, by the way, let's talk about that real quick. Amir Smith-Marset, best returning, best all time kick return in the Big Ten. Purdue knows this. We know this. We come out and Purdue was jacked to the tits. I mean, they were licking their chops, ready to go cut down the best Big Ten returner ever. And Amir Smith-Marset, I'm not impressed with how he played the entire game and a few of the plays, the effort that he gave. He got his ass lit up on the first play, first kickoff, and I think it knocked his confidence down. Hey, you guys, you know what's not cool this year? 2020. It hasn't been the best year. All right. We've all been struggling. There is, however, a silver lining in every bad situation. One of those silver linings this year has been DoorDash. Let me talk to you about it. Have you ever been sitting there thinking about, oh, I could use a pizza, or I could use a sandwich, or I could use a burger, but I don't have the time to go get it. I have something to do here at the house, or I'm just not feeling like jumping in the car. Well, guess what? DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's BLUEWIRE, BLUEWIRE, for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Go get that grub. The kick return team is a huge part of this, and obviously they're going
to
go look at the film.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's obviously not his fault. You know, he had like three guys on him by the time he got to the 10-yard right. line. This usually has something to do with the front line.
Right, and they're going to go look at it, and those guys are going to realize if we're going to let Amir be a weapon, we're going to have to work our ass off to open up those lanes. First game, though, first test, we are not the kick return team that we were last year. And that's going to be something that the Hawks are going to have to address because we were one of the best. We were the best in the Big Ten. Special teams wise, we have a punter. He's got
we have a punter.
We've got a fucking punter, boys. He had two great 50-yarders to open the game. Then we were in the midfield, and I know we tried to get cued a little bit, and unfortunately, we didn't get a couple of the roles that we were looking for. And sometimes you can't control that. But from it, just know that this guy has the ability to, when we want to, kick it 50. If we're back on our end of the field, we can kick it 50 every time. And if we get a couple rolls, we get lucky, which is more often than not in the punting game. When we're trying to get cute and put it in the corner, put it inside the 10, the 15, this guy can do it. And he looks
for us to have a weapon as a punter. That's insane for Iowa football, because the way that we play games, we really need a field position advantage.
Need it.
And having one with the foot of the punter is pretty incredible. So hopefully we can take advantage of that.
I'm really excited about Torrey Taylor. He was impressive in his first time out. Keith Duncan gets two field goals, 2 for 2. I think one was like 29, one was like 33. They're both pretty short. He bopped them through. PAT field goal unit looks good. So really nothing to talk about there. And then other special teams wise, our kick coverage seemed to be good. Kevin, you were a part of the kick coverage team for a long time. Basically since our senior year, we've been like one of the best kick coverage teams in the country. I think it looked like we had some guys that were juiced up and ready to go for that unit. And that looked good. And then Charlie Jones, transfer from Buffalo, is our punt returner. And I said it in the reaction pod that I gave to the Patriots.
He was good, man.
Yeah, I said it in the reaction pod. Other than quarterback, punt returner is maybe the biggest position where you have to go earn the trust of everybody on the team, because it's just you're out on a fucking island. And he looked confident. He looked like he has the ability to do something when it's set up right. And I was happy with him back there. It's cool to have a kid transfer in and win that spot. I like it.
I think I did a good job. Fielded the ball, threw some yardage, and I had one really nice return too.
Yeah. And that's, like Drake just talked about, that's part of getting us some field position. That's going to be important. Now, let's roll over the offense to finish here. I get absolutely beaten up in the Benton chat for wanting Spencer Petras to be good. I never guaranteed it. I never guaranteed Spencer Petras should be good. Every time I've talked about Petras.
We all want Spencer Petras to be the goat of goats.
And just because I'm the one who's been saying, I think he's going to be good, I hope he's going to be good, I get destroyed for it. And guess what? He started like 2 of 7. Then he went like 12 of 14 to finish the first half. And no one said shit in the text message. No, it was like, oh, well, fuck. Now, as a first game, as a whole first game, Spencer had the adrenaline of a scared zebra in the Sahara Desert running through his blood. He was absolutely juiced. But I am happy with I saw somebody say like, well, we're going to need to see what the other quarterbacks have. What?
Chill out.
If I wish I could describe what it feels like to, in a real game that matters, have the ball in your hands. I wish I could describe that feeling, because that's something that I actually, regardless of how insignificant long snapping usually is, that is not something to take lightly. There is an electricity that you feel through your fingertips, and Spencer felt that yesterday.
Actually a point in time in your career when you get the ball in your hands. I remember I got the ball against Northwestern a few times when I was like a sophomore or something, and I don't remember hardly any of it.
Yeah, you black out, dude.
Literally black out.
It's and so when I would run out there, Spencer runs out there and he overthrows a bunch of balls because he's got fucking live wire juice in his veins. I am happy. I'm not happy with Spencer's performance. I'm not mad about Spencer's performance and the potential moving forward. He can throw any ball lengthwise that we need him to. He showed that to open the game, Brandon Smith on a seam route down the middle. I mean, if we need him to throw it 80 yards, he might be able to do it. He seemed confident. I don't know. This is just you guys can interject, but he seemed to go out there and be confident making some calls. None of his balls were really.
There was one time that it was like a 4th and 2 maybe. On the negative side of the 50, but it was damn close to midfield, and he was trying to stay on the field, and Brian or KF sent out the punt unit, and Spencer like kind of rolled his eyes and shrugged his shoulders. I was laughing pretty hard.
Dude, I love that. I love it. I mean, it's better than him saying like, you know, like his head down and timid and like being jumpy back there. He looked confident, just not refined. He needs to dial it back a little bit. Your guys' thoughts on Spencer for game one?
I mean, I was just going to say, like, made some misreads on some passes, made some unadvisable throws, missed a couple, but, you know, strong arm, good arm, and not like you said, Eric, I think he has a good command for, you know, a presence on the offense in the huddle, you know, making the right checks. And, you know, I think that's really, really important. So could just be some first game jitters, but, you know, like you said, didn't play great. Didn't play horrible by any means.
Could have been better. Here's what would make a quarterback better though. Penalties tend to kill drives, you know? You know, little false start, holding, those kill drives, fumbles. Mm-hmm. When you give the ball to the other team, that hurts the momentum a little bit, especially
causing fumbles on your own guy.
I mean, son of a bitch, Cole. God damn it, Banwart. Great effort.
I love the effort, but don't go punching out the ball.
I mean, put his arm right in. I mean, textbook.
The guy looked like Peanut Tillman punching football.
The the defense. Coach Parker is going to throw up Banwart and say, "Men, this is how we fucking rip a ball out." Right?
Dude, I mean, that's how good this was. You're killing this kid.
And Cole, if I hope someone tells him this, dude, I love it, bro. Go get some extra yards for your running back, but you know, call it unlucky or misfortune. Son of a bitch. I mean, ball squirts out right to their guy. That hurts. You know, we're going
that
in.
Was a great drive. I think that was like on the 15-yard line.
Yeah.
Our other fumbles, our second to last offensive possession of the game, like what, 6 minutes left at that point?
Go on a nice little drive there, too.
We got a nice drive, gaining chunks of yards left and right. Got a nice little run. I think we would have been on like on the 30-yard line going in. And
man,
that's a game changing play.
I mean,
game changing play.
I mean, we lose
going
by
up three with the ball with 6 minutes left going in, and you cough it up. That, I mean, you, we security. Don't fumble that ball, we win that game. Yeah.
Fucking ball security. And these are the little things. These are the discipline, the basics, the fundamentals that Iowa football is known for.
I would like to see a little more of like a Ferrari offense out of us because we have such insane playmakers.
Oh, by the way, we got a fucking Tyler Goodson Wildcat, if you didn't know.
And that's elite. But we need to do a little more off the play action, I think. Play action should work like so insanely well with how good our run game is and how good our playmakers are.
I'm gonna kind of contradict you there, Drake. I think, you know, our, you know, base two back sets were the best part of our offense yesterday. We were doing a great job running the ball on our two back sets.
Yeah,
we spread out things a little bit more. I feel like we weren't as efficient.
Did we try to do
too
much?
No, that's what I'm saying. Out of two back, imagine if we were just running, if we were running like 23B pass crosses and they think we're running downhill on them, like the back end's going to be super open and our receivers are some of the best in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Like, use the play action off those two backs.
Did we try?
Speaking of two backs, how about the new fullback? Big fan.
Oh my God. I don't know how he played. I thought he looked good on leading through. Potabom with his neck roll. I mean, he's a tank, bro. He looks mean. Drake, give me it. I mean, like, what do you got?
Listen, man, I didn't see all the game. I saw some good plays. I saw some plays that he's going to wish he had back.
Of course.
The neck roll is incredible.
Love it.
I hope the kid adds a little more eye black. And you know, I hope he shows me that he's the next in line of the 23B specialist.
I think he looked really confident too. Obviously confidence doesn't mean that you do everything right, but he was exciting to kind of just see. I mean, the picture that Iowa media, football media put out a day or two before the game of his mullet. He's an interesting cat, man. I mean, the fullbacks just never fail to be interesting dudes. And I think that guy needs a documentary. So offensively, it just felt like there was a lot there. I mean, Brandon Smith was so money getting just 1 yard past the first down marker on several times and getting us huge third down like completions. I mean, Amir Smith-Marset was almost non-existent in the offense. There was
he got his targets. He just
targets.
He got 5-6 targets at least.
I mean, as far as production wise.
Yeah, production wise, yeah.
And there was a couple balls where I would have liked to see him fight a little bit more. And not maybe look for that PI call. But it did almost feel like, you know, our run game looks so dominant at times. I mean, Goodson is insane, and Makai and Ivory are like light versions of Goodson. They all kind of are, you know, that 5'10", 5'11 build, and they all have good speed. Goodson looks like he's put on just a little bit of muscle, and he wants the contact now. I mean, he's ducking his shoulder, trying to run people over. The spin move and the balance to keep running. We better appreciate what we have in Tyler Goodson, number 15, because you just don't get those backs very often. You just don't. And
yeah, I mean, we're pretty fortunate. I think we got two really good. I think Nikai had a good game as well. He's a pretty special dude as well.
He's got incredible vision. I mean, he's the
fact that Kevin keeps calling him Mikai. It just sends me over the edge.
Kevin exaggerates certain syllables of words sometimes. Like, I'm pretty sure he calls Oregon. He just has these little shit that
it's an O-N at the end of the word, is it not?
It is, but that doesn't. Not every word in the English language is phonetic.
How do you say the word O-N?
How do you say the word ton? How do you say the word T-O-N?
Yeah, bitch. Good. Thanks, Drake.
You're welcome, bro. And people say I'm an idiot, dude. You know how many people told me I'm a stupid?
Me. I probably said that at some point.
Yeah, well, guess what? Ton sounds like Oregon.
That's good. That's a good point. Anyway, back to it. Mekhi is the one who scored the running touchdown. I mean, shit. We've got a rushing attack, and I think this is where people got angry, is we didn't see Tyler Goodson in the fourth quarter. He didn't get the ball. And you can argue till the cows come home. I don't really think it matters who was in the game. I mean, obviously Mekhi's the one that fumbled the ball, but Tyler Goodson was the one who fumbled the ball earlier when our own guy knocked it out. So it's not like there's the big enough difference to.
And can we get the message out to T Good to take off the forearm sleeves? Them bitches are slippery.
Yeah. I mean, they look swaggy, but like, you know.
Yeah, but you know what looks not swaggy when the ball's on the ground.
Yeah, dude. You're right. So I mean, a lot of this offense, Spencer not being in rhythm, and the offense just stalling at times. Penalties and turnovers. Second half, we scored 3 points. You can't do that. You can't score 3 points in the second half of a game and expect to win. You can't do that. And we killed ourselves. But I think the potential is there. The potential is there. The offensive weapons are there. We can do anything we want. There was one play where I was like, holy shit, I've never seen this before in Iowa football. All of our main op, 1, 2, and 3 was taken, and Tracy ran a crossing route at about 7 yards deep, and he was like our fourth option on the play. And I was like, holy shit, our fourth option is Tyrone Tracy. Like, no offense to some of the guys we played with, but there was a time where, you know, that 2015 season where, like, we had Tavon Smith, you had Vandenberg running around. He got open occasionally. And then it was like, receiving wise, where do we go? We've got all the options. And then you have a running attack. But here's the problem is we could be in for a long season potentially if we don't clean up the penalties.
Yep. I was just about to say the same thing.
We could lose every fucking game this season if we play like we did yesterday. Every game.
And our offense on the exact same day would have looked a ton different had we just have not put them in terrible positions with the penalties.
Yep.
So it would have been a different situation.
I'm excited for the potential. I'm worried about cleaning up the discipline because it's not, you know, sometimes teams are what they are. The 2014 team wasn't disciplined. It's not like we just could clean that up week to week. It's kind of an off-season culture. What kind of team are you thing? I hope that this was a one-time deal. But if we have 100 yards of penalties every game, the Hawkeyes are 1-7 or 2-6, and we fucking suck. But hey, if we get 4 or 5 penalties for 40 or 50 yards, and we win turnover battles, we could win every game on our schedule. So that's how I see it. That's game one. We're 0-1. Keith Duncan, right before we got on this podcast, tweeted your current position is not your end. I don't know, some shit like something. Your current situation is not your final destination. And that's true. That is true. Everything's still in front of us. We don't even need to talk about the Big Ten championship. Shit, Penn State, they're waking up feeling the same thing we are.
Did somebody ship Keith Duncan the Philosopher's Stone or what?
I guess he's looking for all of them. He's trying to get the glove. It is what it is. Hawks are 0-1. And now,
we did not beat Purdue by a million. And guess who put the house on the Hawks minus four?
Yeah. And, you know, I clearly spat out that over 53 when David Bell or when Rondell was still playing and their starting running back was still playing. I don't even know if it mattered. 53 didn't hit. Penn State minus 6.5 didn't hit. I'm 0 for 2 on the weekend. Kevin's 2 for 2. This is why Drake stays away from college games, and the NFL games are going as we speak. So,
and guess what? Drake was 0-1 because Philadelphia is now the new fade. It's fade New York City and fade Philadelphia. It's fade Northeast. Washington. It's just the Northeast, man. You can bet Buffalo.
You might want to fade the whole state of New York. You might want to fade the whole state of New York right now because Buffalo is losing to the Jets.
Jesus Christ. My God.
All right,
dude, well, turn this podcast off and burn New York to the fucking ground.
Yeah, guess what? Don't listen to us. We don't know. We don't know anything about football. That's what we've learned. And hopefully the one thing that the Hawks know this upcoming week and moving forward is that they got to be cleaner. That's the name of the game. Hawks weren't clean enough. And a good Purdue team. I think a Purdue team that is officially, after the last 3 years, they have officially set their place in the Big Ten as someone who can beat
everybody. They've shed the Purdue nickname.
They are no longer Purdue. They beat Ohio State, who was highly ranked a year or two ago. They can beat anyone. They have the athletes to beat anyone. And the Hawks can do the same. But we got to play cleaner. We got to take care of the ball. Gosh, damn it.
It feels bad to lose to those guys.
It feels bad to lose. It's like when the aces don't hit. It's like when the aces don't come through.
Do we really need to get into that?
Nope. Drake had a bad night at the poker table just to cap off a shitty Saturday. That is episode 150 something of the Wash Up Walk-Ons. The Hawks are 0-1 and Fat Titch Gerald and the boys are coming to town. They're coming to town, and they have a 40-point win over the Maryland Terrapins, and they're feeling confident. And if we do the same kind of shit, we're going to be 0-2. So that's that. We'll be back on Thursday to talk and preview that game. Hope you guys have a good week. That's it. Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.